pictures of it, and I cannot make it. He called me before, he's not to get it.
Once again, we're pleased to welcome everybody to the Hill of Jeshurun to Rabbi Shachar's shiur of around the year. This is our fourth shiur, I believe. The upcoming shiur will be on February the 15th, Wednesday evening, 8 p.m., and the topic at that point will be Yivur Hashanah. It will be other Aleph at that point. We hope you'll all join us for that.
Tonight's shiur will be on the topic of Tu B'Shvat. I'm sure you must all remember that as young children, when you went to the yeshivas, they used to give you boxes to eat on Tu B'Shvat. So I'd like to discuss a little bit that minig, what sources, and other aspects of Tu B'Shvat, which are more serious than the eating of the box. So I remember as a child when I used to eat the box, I used to wonder, is this thing edible? Is this Michael Adam, or is this Michael Behemoth? So many years later, after learning in the yeshiva, we came to the realization that it's really a question in the poskim. The Gemara says that the obligation to be mafresh trumas to maizes is that anything that grows in Eretz Yisrael, any fruits or vegetables or grain that grows in Eretz Yisrael, may not be eaten unless you first mafresh trumas to maizes. And if you eat it before the hafrasha, you violate the yisur of tevel, the biblical prohibition. So the Gemara says that not all fruits require hafrasha trumas to maizes in the Torah. There is a category of certain vegetables and fruits where the requirement for hafrashas trumas maizes only the rabbanon. One of the cases the Gemara says is baksa. Gemara says baksa. So for what reason is hafrashas trumas maizes from the rabbanon on baksa? So there's a machlokes. It's an argument between the Rambam and the Ravid in the first perek in Hilchos Maizes. The Ravid writes that the only biblical requirement for hafrashas trumas maizes is in Dogon Tirish V'Yitzin. That's what the Chumash speaks about. Maizet Dogon Chom Sirosh Chod Yitzarach. Dogon refers to the five types of grain, wheat and barley, and the various forms of wheat and various forms of barley. Tirosh refers to wine or grapes. And Yitzar refers to olives or olive oil. And in HaTorah, all other fruits and vegetables do not require any trumas maizes. Apples and estrogen and oranges and potatoes and tomatoes and all other things. Everything is only to the Rabbanon. That's the opinion of the Ravid. That's how Rashi and Tosafot say. That's how it's generally assumed in the Shulchan Aruch. Most of the Pesukim hold like that. That the only requirement in HaTorah for HaFrashas trumas maizes are these three types, Dogon, Tirosh, V'Yitzar. When the Gemara makes the statement on Daf Tezvav and Rosh Hashanah, that Maisach HaRuvin is only Midi Rabbanon, HaFroshes and Baksa is only Midi Rabbanon, it doesn't only mean Baksa, it means everything outside of Dogon Tirosh V'Yitzar. The Rambam disagrees, and the Rambam thinks, well, if grapes and olives require HaFroshes, Trumas, Maisach, Minatera, why should I distinguish between these two fruits as opposed to all other fruits? So all fruits require HaFroshes, Minatera. Vegetables, the Rambam agrees, is only Midi Rabbanon. That's the more, the Maisach Yerek is only Midi Rabbanon. But the Rambam's view is that all fruits require HaFroshes, Minatera. So then the Rambam gets stuck with this Gemara. The Gemara says that Baksar is a fruit that grows on a tree. According to the Rambam, that all fruits require HaFroshes, Trumas, Maizes, Menatera. So how come the Gemara says that Maisach HaRuvin is only the Rabbanon? And to the Rambam, that it's not Roi L'Achila Sodom. He says that most people, he doesn't exactly say it's not Roi L'Achila Sodom. So he says the Gemara means to say that it's not Maichol Roi B'nei Yadav. That most normal people in their right mind wouldn't eat that kind of stuff. So therefore, it's Maichol Behemoth. So Maichol Behemoth is not Tevel, only Maichol Adam itself. What is the source, however, of the minig? The pretty recent minig. It isn't recorded in the traditional form. What is the source of this minig to eat the boxer on Tu B'Shvat? So it's very strange. The source seems to be the statement that the Gemara has on Tezvav on the Beis in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, which was taken out of context. The Gemara has a statement that which has nothing to do with eating boxer on Tu B'Shvat. The Gemara says the following. There is a difference. It's important to know whether the apples grew in Shnas Tavshin Memches or they grew in Shnas Tavshin Memtes, or the potatoes grew in Shnas Tavshin Memches or they grew in Shnas Tavshin Memtes. What's the difference? So there are two differences. There are two differences. First of all, the din requires that you have to be makris trumas and maizes from the peres that grew this year on the other peres that grew this year. Let's say I have a lot of farms in Eretz Yisrael. And I grow a lot of potatoes. All over the country I grow potatoes. So all the potatoes that grow, you can't be makrish potatoes on tomatoes or tomatoes on potatoes. You have to be makrish min al she'osa min. You're not able to be makrish even b'dieved. If you're makrish min al she'in amino, the hafrosha is not chal. Everything is going to remain tevel. not only do you have to be mafrish from the same min, you have to be mafrish from the peiros that grew within the same year. All the peiros that grew on top shin mem ches are tevel sub 1, and all the peiros that grew on top shin mem tes are tevel sub 2, and you have to be mafrish min ebe on the peiros that grew that year. That's based on the pasuk in Chumash that reads aser ti aser, it's called tuaz aracha hayoteh asadeh shana shana. It's a pasuk in Parashas Re'eh, and the Gemara understands it to mean shana shana, that every year you have to be mafrish the peiros that grew that year on other peiros that grew that year. You're not permitted to be mafrish mishana al chavata. How exactly do you determine whether it's shana al chavata? If the peiros are very rigid and they only grow in the year, so over here, you sit in a chair like this, everybody sits in their chair in their place. So it's good. If the potatoes grow, they start growing after Rosh Hashanah and they finish growing before next Rosh Hashanah. So it's good. So these are the potatoes from Tavshin Memchet. No, the potatoes from Tavshin Memchet. What do you do? You sit like this, you lean out a little bit. And what if the potatoes start growing before Rosh Hashanah and they grow into after Rosh Hashanah? It's a little sloppy. The fruits don't always, they're not so rigid. They're not such yekis that they just stay in their place and that's it. They grow only in Tavshin Memchet. They don't go before and after. So what do you do if it grows from one year to the next? So the Gemara says, obviously it's always going to grow from one year to the next. So the Gemara says you have to have a certain point in the growth of the fruit or the vegetable that's koveya, what year it belongs to. So the Gemara says there are various things that are koveya. If it's a grain, if it's a wheat or barley or any type of a grain that's growing dogon, then the koveya is the havoah shlish. When it's one-third grown, when did it reach the point of one-third of its full growth? At the moment that it reaches Havoah Shlish, if that moment took place, that point occurred in Tavshin Memchet, so the peiros belong to that year. And if that moment occurred in Tavshin Memchet, then the peiros belong to that year. What exactly does that mean? One-third of the full growth? That's also a question. Does it mean one-third of the time that it takes to grow? Does it mean one-third of the size that it's ultimately going to be? That's not going to correspond. You leave the thing, you plant seeds in the ground, and it takes a couple of months till it grows. The one-third of the time that it takes is going to be very tiny because the main growth that happens in the end. So if you insist that the Pashup Shat is that Havoah Shlish means when it's fully one-third of the size that it's going to be at the end, it's going to be way after one-third of the time that it's going to be sitting in the ground. Some That's what it's generally assumed. Havoah Shlish means not one-third of the time, but rather one-third of the size that it's supposed to have ultimately when all things are finished. So the Koveya, the koveya for dogon is havoah shlish. The Gemara says the koveya for fruits that grow on a tree, is not hash. The Gemara doesn't use the term havoah shlish. The Gemara says the koveya is chanota. If the chanota occurred during this year, belongs to this year. If chanota grows the next year, then the peiros belong to the next year. What exactly is chanota? That's also a question. What does chanota mean? So usually we translate chanata in modern Hebrew, we say the word chanata means budding. Budding of the fruit means when you don't have a fruit at all, you just have a flower. And you know that this flower is going to develop into a fruit at some later point. And the poskim from the last century point out that although the Rishon will feel like that, but the term chanata means the budding of the fruit, which is a very early stage, way before the fruit is nothing there to eat yet. But the Rambam says not so. The Rambam, based on a Gemara, the Rambam holds that the Gemara says this, the Rambam says the Gemara, and that's why we assume la halacha that the term chanota means that the fruit is so sufficiently developed already that it is edible. You can already eat it. And if the fruit is so raw, let's say you sometimes have green apples, that if you eat it, you get a bellyache. So that's before chanota. We would, if you use the term chanota in modern Hebrew, chanota means when the fruit began to bud, that's way before you even have anything that's green. There's nothing there at all. But the way we assume la halacha, chanata means when it's edible, when it's roilachim. So when, by peiros or ilan, it depends when the chanata is. Then the Gemara says, what about yirokos? What about vegetables? What moment in time, what koveya, what year the vegetables belong to? You planted the vegetables one year and they start growing and they completed another year. So the Gemara says, when it comes to vegetables, the thing that determines what year it belongs to is the lakita. What exactly does that mean? There's also a machlokes. Taisus claims Taisus has a chiddush, an earlier daf. Taisus says in Rosh Hashanah that lakita doesn't mean when you pluck it off of the ground, but rather means when it's fully ripe and you are already able to pluck it off of the ground. I said, why does the Gemara say lakita? Does the Gemara say Gemara Hapri? So Taisus says because the farmer normally plucks it off the ground when it's completed growing, when it's fully grown. And we don't accept that opinion of Tosis. We understand the Gemara Kipshuta, that Lakita means Lakita, when you pluck it off of the ground, when you detach it from the ground, that's Koveya, what year the vegetables belong. Then the Gemara says, Kitnios, if you planted the beans, Bebelach, what Koveya, what year that belongs to. So the Gemara says, there, the Koveya is the Hashrasha, whenever it took roots in the ground. Even though it's going to take a couple of months till it's going to grow, it's way before the Hanotan, it's way before the Havua Shlish, it's way before the Lakita, everything, it's a completely different Koveya. Fine. So the Gemara develops these four things, that there are four moments in time in the development of the fruit that Koveya, what year the pears belong to. Then the Gemara says that with respect to trees, with respect to pears to Elon, there's another twist that you have to keep in mind. How do you define the year? Normally, we would say that a year means from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, Tav Shin Mem Ches. With respect to Peres to Ilan, the Gemara says, not so. Rosh Hashanah, the Ilanos, is not from Echad V'Tishrei to Echad V'Tishrei, but rather it's sometime in Shvat. And exactly what time in Shvat is it? That the Mishnah records is a dispute between the Beis Shammai and the Beis Hillel. One opinion is that it's Echad V'Shvat, one opinion is Rosh Chodesh Shvat, in other words. The other opinion is that it's Tu B'Shvat, 15th day of Shvat. Who holds which opinion is also a question. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva was mistupik, whether he knew that the din was going to be like Beis Hillel, but he forgot which was the opinion of Beis Hillel. The Gemara wasn't written down, it was transmitted orally. So he lived a few generations after the original Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, and he didn't remember which way was the view of Beis Hillel. So the Gemara says that therefore, when he had his farm, when he had his trees, he was machmer in both directions. Because maybe Beis Hillel's opinion is that it's from Rosh Chodesh Shvatan, and maybe Beis Hillel's opinion is that it's from Tu B'Shvatan. So he adopted all of the chumras into both opinions. Then the Gemara says, but one who is always machmer in all the directions is a fool. The Gemara says that one is mekel. There's always a machlekes. There's always machlekes in on everything. So there are those people who always adopt the kula opinion. If they hear that any one rabbi in the world is mekel on something, so that's good enough for them. They don't have to be so ultra-orthodox. As long as there's an opinion lahakel, so that's a reliable opinion, so they make. So the Gemara says, such a person who follows all the cool opinions, doesn't mean he's not following any opinion. He just wants to be a maker. So the Gemara calls him a Rosh. Whoever follows all the cool opinions is a Rosh. And whoever follows all the Chumra opinions is a fool. He should follow one rabbi, pick out one rabbi, and whatever that one rabbi says, you should follow. Unless he can't decide which rabbi to pick out. Unless, let's say, I feel close to this rabbi, the other rabbi, the other rabbi, the other rabbi. I have five rabbis whom I feel close to. I can't pick out one rabbi, I want to follow everything that he says. Then I have to follow the majority opinion. Okay, so then I go. So then I don't say, as long as someone is mekel, I can be mekel. As long as someone's machna, I'll be machna. Again, you have to follow the majority view. The three out of five, so three out of five will be the majority. You're not obligated to take the majority view of all the rabbis in the whole wide world. You don't have to follow everybody. You pick out those rabbis whom you feel close to, whom you feel their opinion means something to you. And you follow the majority of those opinions. So the Gemara says that because Rabbi Akiva wasn't sure what the opinion of Beis Hillel was, if he would have known what the view of Beis Hillel was, and he would have been machmir like Beis Shammai, that would have been a foolish thing to do. He would have declared haksil b'choy shecholot, that he's doing a nonsensical thing, to be machmir against the view of Beis Hillel. But because the tradition, Gemara is topic like, he wasn't sure what the tradition was, what did Beis Hillel say? He wasn't sure what the din was, so that's why he felt he had to be machmir in both directions. That's how the Gemara says on Daf Yudalan and Beis. But we know what the tradition is. We have the correct tradition that Beis Hillel are of the opinion that Tu B'Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah Lelanis, it's the 15th of Shvat. So therefore, we know that from the 15th of Shvat to the 15th of Shvat, that is the that's the total year, that's the Zman of the Shana for the Teres Hayim. So what is the Koveya, what's the determining factor when the fruits are sufficiently grown, they have sufficiently developed on the tree till the point of Chanata. That point of Chanata, and Chanata we assume la halacha doesn't mean the beginning of the budding, way before there's anything even there, but Chanata we follow the Rambam's opinion, that's how the more recent poskim have accepted like the Rambam. The Chanata means when the tree is sufficiently developed, that it's roi l'achila, that it's edible, it's yi eloinus ha-maisus. It's roi l'achila. So if the Chanata of the Peiris occurred before Tu B'Shvat, and those Peiris belong to last year. And if, even though it's already Shnas Tav Shin Mem Tes, Tishrei Cheshvan Kislev Teves, and half of Shvat is 4.5 months into Shnas Tav Shin Mem Tes. So still I say, whatever fruits are growing on a tree, had the Chanata in the first 4.5 months of Tav Shin Mem Tes, belongs to Shnat Tavshin Memches. And whatever Teres in the tree have the Chanata after Tu B'Shvat belongs to Shnat Tavshin Memches. Fine. So the Gemara says, but what do you do if you have an orchard? What do you do if you have a whole farm full of trees that are growing? And not all, they're not all such yekis over here either. What are you going to do? Some of the trees are going to, in the same orchard, some of the trees are going to have chanata before Tu B'Shvat, some of the trees are going to have chanata after Tu B'Shvat. So what are you going to say? That half of the trees in the same orchard, half of the pears that grew on half of the trees belong to last year, and the pears that grew on the other half of the trees belong to this year. How can that be? So the Gemara quotes a braisa and after Zvavam Abay. But the braisa quotes in the name of the Tana Reb Nechemya, that if you have Elon Hoysa Brecha Achas, you have one, the tree only has one batch of pears that are growing. And part of the pears have the chanota before Tu B'Shvat. Part of the pears have the chanota after Tu B'Shvat. And he gives as an example, Buxer, Charuvim, that they don't all have the chanota Bevasachas. It spreads out over the course of a week or two. So that week or two can be half of the pears in the orchard will be before, some will be after. So he says, since some of the pears had the chanota after Tu B'Shvat, the whole orchard is labeled as next year, as the second year's orchard, and nothing belongs to the previous year. So Rabbi Yechanan has a comment in the Gemara that that's how we paskin, like this Tana Reb Nechemya, that if you have one orchard with a lot of trees, and some of the trees are having chanota before, and some of the pears having chanota after, all the pears belong to the second year. But the expression that he uses, Nagu ha'om b'charuvin ki Rebbe Nechemya, that the minhag ha'olam is, the Gemara says that no Tana ever paskin the din over here. We didn't have that the rabbi sat down and decided that the din is like Reb Nechemya. The minhag ha'olam, the balabatim on their own, developed a practice that they all followed the view of Reb Nechemya. And it gives an example with respect to Buxer. So he doesn't say that there's a minhag to eat Buxer on Tu B'Shvat. He's talking about Buxer trees where the chanota spreads out over a course of a week or two. And some of the Buxer fruits had the chanota before Tu B'Shvat, some had the chanota after. So he says the minhag ha'olam is, with respect to Buxer or similar trees, the Braisa gives the Zeisim or the Kolim, several types of trees that the chanota spread out over a period of time just around Tu B'Shvat season. So then, since some of them had the chanota after Tu B'Shvat, all the pears of the whole orchard belong to the second year. So now we have this strange minhag in the last, just the last century, based on the simple reading of the Gemara. If you don't read the whole passage before and you don't know what's going on, you just read this line, we're talking about Tu B'Shvat. And Rabbi Yechon makes a statement, Nogo Am B'Charuvin Kereb Nechemya. The minhag ha'olam is Buxer on Tu B'Shvat. He's not talking about eating Buxer on Tu B'Shvat. He's talking about Buxer trees that had the chanota half before and half after. So they take this, the minhag takes this line in the Gemara out of context. And they say, that's the minhag, that you eat Buxer on Tu B'Shvat. This is a very strange minhag, to say the least. There is a strange discussion in Rishonim on a similar Gemara. The Gemara has in Sanhedrin, Daf Lama Dalet, a statement. The Gemara quotes a pasuk in Tehillim. Achaz Dibra Lakim, Shtayim Zu Shamayti. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated the Chumash to Moshe Rabbeinu, word for word, letter for letter, in such a way that there's more than one level of interpretation than any one given pasuk. So you have, in any one pasuk, you have Shuta Shal Mikra, you have simple level of translation, interpretation. Then you have Remez, then you have Drush, then you have Sod, Paradis. Then the Gemara says, Shivim Parim Latar. There are 70 levels of interpretation on any given pasuk, and they're all valid and they're all acceptable. The Gemara says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated the Chumash in such a way that it should have many different levels of interpretation. Does this apply also to Nevi'im Aksuvim? Maybe it only applies to Chumash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated the pasuk like that. So the Ramban writes in one place in the Sefer HaMitzvos, in his commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvos, he thinks that the same is true regarding Nevi'im Aksuvim. Even though it's not dictated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's the Navi or the Baal Ruach HaKodesh is writing something when in a state of divine inspiration. So he says he thinks that the same is true there, that they had the divine inspiration to write it with such a text that there should be more than one level of interpretation. Not everybody agrees to the Ramban. Others say that it's not true, that it's only a Chumash and a Megillah Esther, the other books of the Tanakh itself. On the assumption that it should be so, if you assume like the Ramban that this is true regarding not only Chumash but also true regarding the Nevi'im Ksuvim, should we assume that this is true regarding the Mishnah and the Talmud, that there should be more than one level of interpretation? The Pashto says certainly not. Why should we assume that the Tanoim wrote such a way, sometimes a person writes a novel and he has more than one meaning. A Basar Adam can also write like that. There's an obvious meaning, and then there's a hidden meaning. You have like that. People wrote a book, and they had two different intentions, not contradictory intentions. There were two kavanot. There are several books and different poems like that. But to assume that the Tanoim worded their statements, worded their dinim, or the Chachmei HaGemara worded their statements in such a way that they meant a hidden meaning and an open meaning. Unrelated. Two different meanings unrelated to each other. Why should we assume like that? So this is a strange discussion in Rishonim, not in Chassidish Svar. I would have thought this past Chassidish Rebbe. The Rishonim discussed it. The Or Zeruah, one of the Rishonim quoted by the Shulchan Aruch, and this passage is quoted. The Or Zeruah quotes a sefer which we don't have today that's called Basar al Gabi Gechovim. Strange sefer. One of the books from the Rishonim, from the Gaonim. And this sefer, Basar al Gabi Gechovim, he quotes a passage from the Gemara, Eim Avirim al HaMitzvah. What does it mean, Eim Avirim al HaMitzvah? So anyone who's familiar with the Gemara knows that it means the following. If it's Sukkot today, and I have a lulav and an esrog in this room, and it's a nice, beautiful lulav and an esrog, and I can fulfill a mitzvah by picking up this lulav and esrog, shaking it, saying a bracha. And I have a lulav and an esrog in the other room. So the klal is, Eim Avirim al HaMitzvah. You're not permitted to walk away from the avatar tefillin, and the talis over here. My talis, my talis, not someone else. My lulav. So I'm not permitted to walk away to fulfill a mitzvah with the other talis in the other room, or with the other tefillin, or with the other lulav. If I have a lulav here, I have to do the mitzvah with the one that I have. You're not permitted to walk away and do the mitzvah with something else. That's a simple translation of the word. So this sefer, Basar Gabi Cholim, discusses the following common shayla. On Hashana Rabbe, the Gemara says, we have a minute that we clap by shayla. After the davening, the floor of the shul is all full of the shayla. Is it permissible to trample on the shayla that are on the floor? He says, no, it's prohibited. Eimav, yirim ala mitzvah. It's not allowed to walk on a thing that you use for a mitzvah. So he says, and even though it's obvious from the Gemara that that's not what it says, that's not what it means, it's completely taken out of context, but he says, Ein ha-mikra yotze midei pshuta. He applies this concept to the passages in the Talmud. He says, very strange, says that the rabbis, when they worded their statements, worded them very carefully, and they sometimes had in mind, he doesn't say often, he says, they sometimes had in mind more than one meaning in wording their statements. So if they worded it in such a way, Eim Avirim al HaMitzvah, and the simple translation is that you're not permitted to step on the Hashanah, even though in the context of the passage in the Gemara, they're clearly referring to something else, that you're not supposed to walk to another room and neglect the tefillin or the lulav in this room, but that's also included, that you're not allowed to trample on, you're not allowed to walk on the Hashanah. So similar to that statement, and that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch quotes that Or Zeruah in the name of this strange sefer Basar al Gabi Gecholim and Hilchas Hashana Rabbe, that when the floor of the shul is full of Hashanahs, he's not permitted to trample on the Hashanahs because Eim Avirim al HaMitzvah. That's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. So this passage in the Gemara also has been taken out of context. And the Gemara, the minig has it that the Gemara, Rabbi Yechanan worded his statement in such a way, Naguhom Bacharuven Kirebi Nechemya, in such a way as if to mean that the minig is that you eat boxer on Tuba Shvan. Even though that's not, from the context of the discussion, that's not what it means, but some assume that that's a hidden meaning, that it was the second meaning that was intended over here. So again, what is the significance of determining whether the Peres belong to Tavshin Memches or the Peres belong to Tavshin Memches? So the Gemara says there are two dinim. We started with one, we'll mention the other. The first din is that Aser Tiasa is called Tvoat Aracha, Hayote Hatod, Hashon Hashon. You have to be Mafrish, Trumas and Maisris, Meos Hashon, Alos Hashon. You have to be Mafrish from the potatoes that grew on that year. Just like you cannot be Mafrish from potatoes on tomatoes and from oranges onto apples, so too you cannot be Mafrish from potatoes of one year on potatoes of another year. That's one din. So you have to determine what year it belongs to. So you determine normally from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. When it comes to fruits that grow on a tree, we say no, Tu B'Shvat to Tu B'Shvat. And what happens if it didn't grow so rigidly within the bounds of that year? It overlaps. So then we say there's one moment in the development of the fruit or the vegetable. That's the koveya, that's the decisive moment in time. And in the four different types of things that grow, the four different aspects of vegetation, we have a different zman. That by the yirakas we say the koveya is the lakita, and by kidneys we say that it's hashrasha, and by the perisilum we say that it's chanote. And by the dogon, by the grains, they say that the kaveya is the havoashlich. Then the Gemara has another din. What exactly are you supposed to be mafrish? Anything that grows in Eretz Yisrael is tevel, may not be eaten until you mafrish the proper trumas mice. What constitutes the proper trumas mice? First, you have to take off truma. How much do you take for truma? So the Gemara says, menatari, you can take a mashahu, a tiny little bit. But the proper Derech Eretz requires you should take 2%. Echad mechamishim is 2%. Fine. What do you do after you take off your truma? Then you have to take off, after you take off 2%, you only have 98 units left. So then the Gemara says that you take off 10% of what's left, and you give it to the levy. What's 10% of 98? 9.8. So you give it away to the levy. After taking off 9.8 from 98, so how much do you have left now? In high mathematics, how much? 88.2. Okay, so now you have 88.2 left. So you, now you have to take off another tenth of what's left. So what's a tenth of 88.2? 8.82. So you have to take off 8.8, and this has to be precise. The Gemara says you can't just donate over here. You're not supposed to donate. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Hamarbe b'maisrois, maisrois, the Gemara says, Hamarbe b'maisrois, maisrois b'mukol tom. You have to give, you have to be as precise as you can. So if you took 2% off for Truma Gedayla, and you have left 98 units, you have to give exactly 9.8 to the best of your ability. You have to measure it out. And then after taking that out, you have to give 8.82 for the next. Okay. So now that 8.82, what happens to that? The 9.8 you give to the levy. That's my serishon. What do you do with the 8.82? What do you do with that? So the pasuk says in Chumash, it depends what year of the Shemitah you're holding by. If it's a Shemitah year, so there's nothing to discuss, period. You don't give any Truma, you don't give any Maisa, you don't give any Maisa Sheni, you don't give anything. Everything is Hefka, everything is Pasuk from Shumas Maisa. Just like the animals, the Pasuk says, you can eat and the animals can eat. What kind of a strange expression is that? The Pasuk in the Shpatim? Just like the animals can eat without Afrashas Shumas Maisa. So the human beings can also eat in Shemitah year without Afrashas Shumas Maisa. But what about the rest of the years of Shemitah? So the Gemara explains, based on the Pesukim, that it depends which year of Shemitah you're holding by. If you're in the first or the second year of the Shemitah cycle, then the 8.82 has to be Maisa Sheni, which you take to Yerushalayim, and you have to eat it in Yerushalayim, Bikdusha V'Tahara. You can only eat it in Yerushalayim, it's Mancha Mizbeach Bonner. It's Mana Zeh, we don't have a Mizbeach Bonner, there's no altar built, so you're not permitted to eat the Maisa Sheni. Even though you don't have to eat the Maisa Sheni in the Beis HaMikdash. So one would have thought, what do I care if there is a Beis HaMikdash, not a Beis HaMikdash? Nonetheless, the Gemara learns out from a Pasuk that you're not permitted to eat the Maisa Sheni, even Bikdusha V'Tahara, unless you have a Mizbeach Bonner. Because Mana Zeh were all Tameim anyway, and the Maisa Sheni is Tameim, so those are an additional two reasons why you're not permitted to eat the Maisa Sheni. So there are three reasons why we cannot eat Maisa Sheni with Mana Zeh. Number one, there's no Mizbeach. Number two, we are Tameim. And number three, the Peiris are usually Tameim. That's if it's the first or the second year of the Shemitah cycle, then you're Mafresh Maisa Sheni, which you eat the Yerushalayim Kedusha V'Tahara. If it's the third year of the Shemitah cycle, so instead of being Mafresh Maisa Sheni and eating it the Yerushalayim Kedusha V'Tahara, we're Mafresh the 8.82. We declare as Maiser Oni, has no Kedusha, does not have to be eaten in Yerushalayim, and it's supposed to be given to the poor people. The Yaniim come, and they pick it up. What do you do the fourth and the fifth year? The same as the first and the second year. You mafish Maiser Sheni, and you take it to Yerushalayim, you eat it the Kedusha. What do you do the sixth year? Same as the third year. So the Gemara wants to know, well, what if the Peiris started to grow in the second year and it finished growing in the third year? What if they started in the third year, they finished growing in the fourth year? So what are you mafresh? Are you mafresh Maisa Sheni or are you mafresh Maisa Rani? So the Gemara says, you follow these rules and regulations. Whenever the Rosh Hashanah is, normally Rosh Hashanah is Echad B'Tishrei till Echad B'Tishrei. With respect to Peiris that grow on a tree, with respect to fruits, the Rosh Hashanah is Tu B'Shvat, Tu B'Shvat. And then we have to follow the Koveya. What stage in the growth is the crucial stage? So by the bebalach it's one thing, and by the vegetables it's a different thing, and by the fruits it's a different thing, and by the dogon it's a different thing. So the koveya that determines which year it belongs to know whether you can be tori mizel zeh, is also koveya whether you have to give maisa sheni or maisa roni. And that's the whole story of Tu B'Shvat. That's what Tu B'Shvat is all about. Tu B'Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah le'ilanos. That's considered the Rosh Hashanah as far as the Peiris le'ilan are concerned. And whether the Hanata occurred before or after will determine whether these Peiris require a Hafrasha of Maisa Sheni or they require a Hafrasha of Maisa Rani. Whether they belong to this year's fruits or to that year's fruits, and whether they can be Torah Mizelze. That's the whole story of Tu B'Shvat. Shemitah, there's a major dispute in Achrayim. The Pashtus is that with respect to Shemitah, we don't say that Rosh Hashanah Ilanos is Tu B'Shvat. Rashi says that with, that's our most 98 out of 100 Paschim will say that with respect to Shemitah, it's from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. So the year has a Kedushas Man, like Shabbos has a Kedushas Man, and Yom Tov has a Kedushas Man. So the whole Shnas HaShemitah is called Shabbos. The whole year is called Shabbos. So the Shabbos has a Kedushas, so you can't say, no, with respect to Paris or Elon, with respect to the trees, the Shemitah is a different year. It starts in Tu B'Shvat and it ends in Tu B'Shvat. That's how most of the Paschim hold. And the Shaloh HaKadosh, who lived in the 1500s, he was a rabbi in Frankfurt, and then he lived and he moved to Eretz Yisrael. So he writes in his sefer about dinim of hafashas, trumas, and maizes, and shmitah, all the different dinim. So the Shaloh HaKadosh has this strange view that's shared by very few poskim, it's not accepted, that just like with respect to trumas and maizes, the Rosh Hashanah for Paris Elon is Tu B'Shvat to Tu B'Shvat, so too with respect to shmitah. To reject the opinion, it's a shita tchui, we don't follow his opinion. We say with respect to shmitah, everything depends on Rosh Hashanah. There is yet another din, and that's the din that's relevant for us today. In America, there is yet a third din with respect to Tu B'Shvat that runs as follows. The Torah describes the din of Orla, that whenever you plant a tree, Kisavoy al Horus, and the Titan call it Smat, when you plant a tree in Eretz Yisrael, so any fruits that grow the first 3 years may not be eaten. They're not only also Bachilo, they're also Bahano. Not only am I not allowed to eat them, I'm not allowed to sell them to a guy, I'm not allowed to feed them to my Bahim. They're also Bahano. What do you do? So the Mishnah says you have to burn it. You have to destroy the fruits in order not to get any hanorah. The pears that grow the fourth year in Eretz Yisrael are called Revi. The pears from the fourth year are Revi. What do you do with the Revi? The same thing you do with the Maizah Shein. You're supposed to eat it in Yerushalayim, Bikdusha v'Tahara, and Mizman HaZeh, there's no Mizbeach, and we are Tomei, and the pears are usually Tomei, so that's why we're not permitted to eat Revi. So the Mishnah tells us until when do you have to observe the laws of Orla, and how long do you have to observe the laws of Revi? The first 3 years is Orla, also Banua, and the pears that grow in the fourth year have to be eaten in Yerushalayim. If you can't bring it to Yerushalayim, it has the same thing as Maizah Shein, you have to depot it and take the money to Yerushalayim and buy food with that money, and then once you depot the pears, then you can eat the pears even chutz to Yerushalayim. So the Mishnah makes it very clear, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes all of these dinim, that you don't write down on your personal calendar when you happen to plant this tree or this bush. The din of Revi applies to any berries that grow on a bush or any fruits that grow on a tree. The din of Orla and Revi don't depend on when you personally happen to plant the tree. You write down what date it was and what year, and then 3 years later, after the date that you planted it, will be the end of the Orla season, and then the next year will be the end of the Revi season. The Gemara says no. The Gemara says it goes by whenever Rosh Hashanah is. So when is Taka the Rosh Hashanah? So the Gemara says an interesting claw that Rosh Hashanah, Linitio, a young tree is called, in English is called a sapling, I think. An older tree is called a tree. In Hebrew also there are two different words. There's the word Nitio and there's the word Elon. Elon means an old tree. And Nitio means a young sapling. So the Gemara has a strange concept that Rosh Hashanah, Linitio, the Rosh Hashanah for young sapling, Zechet B'Tishrei. Same Rosh Hashanah is for a human being, same Rosh Hashanah is for everybody else. And the Rosh Hashanah for Ilanos, for all the trees, is Tu B'Shvat. What exactly does that mean? So the Gemara says, what it means is the following. Somebody plants a tree or a bush, Pesach time, during Svirah, whatever, May, June, July, August. After he plants the tree, if the tree had already taken root, and the tree was growing for 30 days before Echad B'Tishrei, before Rosh Hashanah, so then Shloshim Yom B'Shana Kruyim Shana. 30 days in the year count as 1 year, so when it comes Rosh Hashanah, what we call Rosh Hashanah, Echad B'Tishrei, the tree is already considered 1 year old. When it comes, even though it's only 44 days old, Gemara says that usually when you plant the tree, it may take up until 14 days to take root. So the 14 days it takes root, and 30 days it's going to sit in the ground and grow and be yoni from the ground. So that's if you planted the tree 44 days before Rosh Hashanah, that's in the middle of Chodesh Av. Planted the tree on Chamisha Sabiyah, so till the end of Av it's going to take root. And the Chodesh Elul, 30 days it's going to be growing. The Shloshim Yom B'Hashanah Kuyim Shana. When it comes Rosh Hashanah, so the first year is up. When it comes next Rosh Hashanah, the second year is up. When it comes the third Rosh Hashanah, the third year is up. So it's all good. So all the 3 years are up. So the Gemara says, no, now the tree is already 3 years old, so it's no longer called a Netiyah, it's no longer a sapling, now it's called an Elon. The Rosh Hashanah Elonos is Tu B'Shvat, so it's still going to be Orla up until Tu B'Shvat. so he's still gaining. So how long? It's really not 3 years old. If you would go according to when you planted it, the 3 years are not up until Tu B'Av. So really, you only had 2 full years and 45 days, 44, 45 days before, and then another 4.5 months into the next year. So he's still saved. It's still only 2.5 years. So that's Talocha. But after it comes to B'Shvat, that's the end of the third year, and there's no longer a din of Orla. What happens if the pears are growing a little before the little after? So again, it depends on whenever the Chanotah occurs. If the Chanotah occurred before Tu B'Shvat, so then it belongs to Orla year. If the Chanotah occurred after Tu B'Shvat, then it belongs to the Revah year. It belongs to the next year. What happens, however, if the fellow planted the tree in the middle of Elul, or in the end of Chodesh Av, and he didn't have his 45 days, he didn't have his 44 days before Rosh Hashanah? So when it came the first Rosh Hashanah, you couldn't say that the first year of the tree is up. So you have to wait till the second Rosh Hashanah. The tree is already a year and 40 days. It's already a year and 40 days since you planted it. Farfan, you have to wait a whole year and 40 days till it's considered the end of the first year. Then it comes next Rosh Hashanah, that's the end of the second year. There comes the third Rosh Hashanah, that is the end of the third year. You still have to wait till Tu B'Shvat, but it's already more than 3 years since he planted it. He already planted it 3 years and 40 days. So that's the dispute in Shulchan Aruch. So one opinion is Tu B'Shvat is Tu B'Shvat. You always have to wait till Tu B'Shvat after the third year is up. And the other opinion is no, Bamed Bar Mamurim, that's if you chiseled off in the beginning. If the first year wasn't a full year and you don't have three really full years on the calendar, so then if you're chiseling off, so you can't, there's a limit how much you can cheat over here. So we only allow you to cheat if you're going to wait until the Tu B'Shvat following the end of the third year. But if you had a full 3 years, so then when Rosh Hashanah comes, so that's the end of the third year. So those are the two opinions in the Shulchan Aruch. Halacha l'maaseh, what do we do? So the Shulchan Aruch quotes a very fascinating klal from the Gemara. The Gemara has in Brachas, Daf Lamed Vav, we who live in Chutz La'aretz, why do we observe this din at all? This din applies even in Chutz La'aretz. It's not only in Eretz Yisrael, it applies all over the world, that when you plant a tree, you're not permitted to eat the pears that grow the first 3 years. How can that be? After all, the pasuk says, "Chumish kesavoy al har." When you come to Eretz Yisrael and a titan called Smarcha, and you plant a tree that has that gives off fruits that are edible, why should we assume that it applies even in America? So the Mishnah Kiddushin says that all the mitzvahs hatleis boras, all the agricultural mitzvahs, only apply in Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't apply anywhere else, with very few exceptions. And one of those exceptions is Orla. That Orla applies all over the world, and it's a halacha. What does that word mean, a halacha? Halacha is a din. Of course it's a, everything it says in the Mishnah is a din. Why does it say it's a halacha? So the Gemara has an argument among the Amoraim. How do you translate that word in the Mishnah? That Orla applies even chutz la'aretz me halacha, based on a halacha. What does that mean, based on a halacha? So one view in the Gemara is that it's mehilchas medina. That the word halacha has a technical connotation of meaning that it's a takonah derabbanan. That menatar is not din of Orla chutz la'aretz, it's an agricultural mitzvah. And the mitzvahs hatleis boras, the agricultural mitzvahs, are all supposed to be limited after Eretz Yisrael. And this one exception to the rule is Midirabbanan. They wanted us not to forget Eretz Yisrael completely. We should remember some of the mitzvahs hatleis boras. So they instituted this din. We should remember it with respect to the din of Orla. This is an easy din, because usually the pears don't grow the first 3 years anyway. They're going to institute the dinim of Trumas and Mises. It's going to be Gahak Tzoras, just like they have trouble in Eretz Yisrael. Everybody's makrish on their own. Nobody trusts the other one's hashgacha. So you're going to have in America, it's been enough to... The problem of kashis in America is difficult enough, so they're going to require the rabbanon, you have to be makrish trumas and maizes, and everything is going to be more difficult. So they didn't require you have to be makrish trumas and maizes and everything. They only said you should observe the laws of Orla, which really don't affect us too much, because the pears or the berries that grow the first couple of years are not really edible, ben kovako, most of the time. The one view in the Gemara is that the requirement for hafrashas, the requirement for observance of the laws of Orla, chutz la'aretz, is mehilchas medina, means that it's only with the rabbanon. The generally accepted view in the Gemara is the other opinion, that it's mehalacha l'moshe misina, that it's really a din min haTorah, but it's known through an oral tradition. So we have, in addition to the Torah shebichtav, the written law, we have a lot of oral traditions. So in the Chumash, it only says you have to observe the laws of Orla in Eretz Yisrael, kisavay al haaretz, and the Titan called it Ismaichol. And the halacha l'moshe misina tells us that this din of Orla even applies to chutz la'aretz as well. So the Gemara says, well, wait a minute, there should be a major difference la'alocha between these two opinions. Whether Orla in America is only midirabbanan or it's midirabbanan, there should be an obvious difference. What do you do when you have a suffix? Whenever you're in doubt what the facts are, or whenever you're in doubt what the dinim are, so if you're in doubt what the facts are, try to find out what the facts are. And that's what the dinim are. Just call up your local Orthodox rabbi and you find out. What if he called your rabbi and he called his rabbi and he called his rabbi? Nobody can figure out what the din is. And we called everybody in the whole United States. We just can't figure out what the facts are. We don't know what the facts are. We don't know what the dinim are. So what do you do? So if you're up against the stone wall, so then Halacha says if it's a suffix regarding a din and a Torah, suffix and a Torah is lechum. If it's a suffix regarding a din and a Rabbanon, then we say if you can't figure it out, the suffix and a Rabbanon is lechum. So the Gemara says, is that true? What's the din if you have a suffix arlo and chutzlor? So the Mishnah says, suffix arlo and chutzlor, it's mutter. It says explicitly in the Mishnah, in Masechet Maaseh Sheni, that a suffix arlo and chutzlor is yemeid. So how can anybody be of the opinion that arlo and chutzlor is mehalocha lemoshe nisinai? If so, then it's really a din menatur. So I should say, sveika deraita lechumra. Why does the Mishnah say that I go lechula? So the Gemara says, no, that was part of the package deal of the halocha lemoshe nisinai. When Moshe Rabbeinu was given this oral tradition that Orlo should apply even a chutz l'aretz, kach nemra halacha, this was part of the nusach of the halacha, that Orlo is also only if it's a vaday Orlo, and if it's a suffolk Orlo, then it's mutter. Exactly what this means is also a question. The Ramban read the Rambam correctly, that's what it says in the Rambam. Ramban read the Rambam as understanding that statement in the Gemara as saying that every halacha l'moshe mitzinai, not only regarding Orlo, whenever you have anything that's only known through halacha l'moshe mitzinai, whenever you have a suffix, you have a right to go l'kulam. And the Ramban didn't like that understanding. He said that it's not correct. He writes that he thinks that halacha l'moshe mitzinai is normally a din menator, and a suffix that writes always has to be l'kulam. This is the one and only halacha l'moshe mitzinai where I say sveika l'kulam is only regarding Orlo. That's the way it's generally assumed, the way the Ramban says. In fact, in the Shulchan Aruch, they elaborate on this point and they explain as follows. What kind of a din is this? That suffix arlo b'chutz l'aretz is mutter. Why should that be so? So they explain as follows that although normally some people sometimes go with the attitude that whatever you don't know won't hurt you. So let's say I'll buy some food. I don't know if it's kosher or not. So if I don't know that it's treif, so there's nothing wrong. So that's not the correct attitude to take. If you don't know that it's treif and you eat it, so you've eaten treif, so you ate it, it's a shaygig. And it's a shaygig where there's a little chia, so it's a little worse than a shaygig. You have to be careful what you eat and what you speak and what you do to make sure that you're not doing an avera. And you can't just keep Shabbos the way you think it's supposed to be kept. You have to study the laws of Shabbos and the laws of Kashrut and the laws of Taras HaMishpacha to make sure that you're not making any mistake. You can't go with such an attitude. Whatever you don't know doesn't hurt you. But with respect to Orlo, that is the din. Whatever you don't know doesn't hurt you, because one of the conditions of Orlo is that you should know about the fact that it's Orlo and Chutz L'aretz. And if I don't have a personal knowledge that this is Orlo, either I don't know what the facts are, or I don't know what the din is, if I don't know the facts, or I know the facts but I don't know what the din is, then there's no prohibition of Orlo. It's not that I'm eating treifas b'shoigeh. It's not considered treifas. Knowledge of the fact is considered part of the definition of the aveira. And the same is extended in Shulchan Aruch with respect to other cases as well. For example, they give a case, let's say I'm dancing at a wedding, and I see somebody there who's dancing at the wedding, and I was just in the hospital, I know that his father just died. So do I have to tell him that he's an Avelis? He's not permitted to dance. It says in Shulchan Aruch, no, he's not doing any Avera. The laws of Avelis don't begin to apply until a person knows, until it's a Yediyah, until it's a Shmiyah, until a person knows that he is an Avelis. Kozman, he doesn't know, so the whole din doesn't apply. And I can even draw him into the dancing. Not only don't have to prevent him from, not only do I not have to stop him from dancing, I can draw him into the dancing. What the Gemara says over here, I have an Orlo orchard. I plant a tree. And it gives off fruits in the first 3 years. And I know that these fruits may not be, I'm permitted to invite you to my home and give you these delicious fruits, put them on the table, give them to you, and let you eat them. I'm not allowed to give you chaza, I'm not allowed to give you treif and food, but I'm permitted to give you orlo, b'chutz l'aretz. In Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to, because knowledge of the fact is not a prerequisite for violating the aveira. Orlo and Eretz are the same as chaza. Even if you don't know the fact and you eat it, you have violated an aveira, b'shegit. But orlo, b'chutz l'aretz, knowledge of the fact and knowledge of the iser are one of the conditions, one of the prerequisites of the din being noig. And if you don't know the fact that it's orlo, you don't know the din, then it's not awesome. So there's no violation of Lifneva, Lisik, and Mikshal. The Gemara says, if I invite you to my home and I give you all the Bahut's law, there's nothing wrong with it. It's perfectly permissible. The Gemara says like that in Kiddushin, that the Chachamim would have this practice. They would invite other people. Rather than throw it out in the garbage, they would invite other Talmid HaChachamim over to their home and give them to eat this treif of food. It was treif for them, It's straight for me because I know that it's straight, but as far as you're concerned, it's kosher. You don't know. Whatever. So in this case, you say, whatever you don't know won't hurt you. The Gemara has several other cases like that, where we declare that knowledge of the Isser is one of the prerequisites, one of the conditions of the Din being knowing. So the Gemara has an interesting klal, that whenever there's a machloikis regarding a din and orlo, what do you do when you have a machloikis, what the din is? So the Torah says, Achei Rav Nahasas, you always have to follow the majority rule. What happens if there's machloikis in the laws of orlo, whether a certain bush or a certain tree or a certain fruit has the laws of orlo applying or not? So again, you should follow the majority opinion. So the Gemara says, not exactly. That's an orlo in Eretz Yisrael, that I follow the majority rule. But regarding orlo b'chutzlar, it's whenever there's a dispute, that the one opinion is wrong. The one opinion who was outvoted by the 25 Rabbanim is not assumed to be wrong. We say that we don't follow that view, but we say it is a suffix, it's still a shaila. We consider it a suffix. It's not a real suffix, it's what we call a suffix hodu. There's a slight suffix that maybe really is kosher. The odds are 25-1 that it's straight, but since there's one slight, slim chance that it may be kosher, that slim chance is enough to say that suffix or l'chutzlar is mutter. Not only by a suffix in the that the one opinion is wrong. The one opinion who was outvoted by the 25 Rabbanim is not assumed to be wrong. We say that we don't follow that view, but we say it is a suffix, it's still a shaila. We consider it a suffix. It's not a real suffix, it's what we call a suffix kosher. There's a slight suffix that maybe really is kosher. The odds are 25 to 1 that it's straight, but since there's one slight, slim chance that it may be kosher, that slim chance is enough to say that suffix olam chutzlort is mutter. Not only by a suffix in the facts, a suffix in din, not only a suffix in din, a legitimate suffix, 1 to 1, even a suffix 25 to 1. 25 Rabbanim say that it's awesome, and one Rav says that it's mutter, we consider that also a suffix olam chutzlort. So that's why the Shulchan Aruch has this theme mentioned on several in several cases, that when you have a machlekes regarding the laws of Orla, even in cases where Eretz Yisrael, we would be machmir because that's the majority view, but regarding Orla b'chutz laretz, we would be mekel because a suffolk Orla b'chutz laretz is mutter, and a machlekes, even if you have an overwhelming role, is still considered a suffolk holder. It's interesting, there is a big dispute in the Gemara regarding bushes, whether the berries that grow in a bush are considered fruits or considered vegetables. It's not a real tree that grows like that. So that's machlekes b'shamay b'suf. B'shamay's opinion is that the berries that grow in bushes, since they're not big trees, it's not what we would call a tree, we would call it a bush. So that's a vegetable, and you say bar pri hadama on it, and since it's a vegetable, so the laws of Orla do not apply. So the law that you're not permitted to eat the fruits in the first year is only a fruit that grows on a tree. He said, but it's an enticing collect smartphone, only applies to a tree. Hey, doesn't apply to vegetables. But we don't follow Bishama's opinion, we follow Bishilov's view, that a bush is considered a regular tree, and you say bari pi hoetz on the berries that grow in the bush, and there is a din of Orla, the berries that grow the first 3 years may not be. What about in Chutz Laretz? What about the berries that grow in the bush in Chutz Laretz? So why not say, well, since Bishama is Mekel in Eretz Yisrael, they hold that whatever grows on a bush is considered a vegetable, and you say bari pi hadoma, and it's not a bar pihuay, it's in the laws of Orla don't apply, so even though we don't follow Bishamai's view, but with respect to Orla b'chutz laretz, we should have the right to be mekel. The suffix also, the Gemara says, no, that's not legitimate. The Gemara says in Brochas, daf lamed vav, Bishamai, b'makom b'shilo, ain't a mishnah. That we totally disregard. If you have contemporary rabbis, 26 rabbis have a machlekes, and 25 rabbanim say that it's awesome, one rabbi says that it's mutter, that's called the suffix kolbim. On such a suffix, you have a right to make on chutz laretz. But if you have Beis Shammai, who was such giant Talmid HaChamim, and Beis Hillel, and it wasn't 25 to 1, they outnumbered the Beis Shammai. The Beis Hillel outnumbered. It wasn't 25 to 1. But the Gemara says Beis Shammai were much sharper, they were much more learned. They knew how to learn much better than Beis Hillel. So the Gemara says, no, we totally ignore the Beis Shammai. We say Beis Shammai b'makom Beis Hillel in a Mishnah, that does not constitute a suffix kolbim. Isn't that unfair? What kind of a statement is that? So the Rav Yehuda explains what this is all about. He says it's not that they had anything chalil against the Beis Shammai, it simply means the following. And he quotes a passage in the Gemara in Nida and Daf Zayin. It's not only Beis Shammai against Beis Hillel. Whenever the Talmud voted and they came to the conclusion that the din is like the majority, we know that whenever there's an argument, you follow the majority rule. It says Mechumash Achar Rav Mahatos. So if we know the din is you follow the majority based on the pasuk Mechumash Achar Rav Mahatos, but we know that there is a minority opinion fakir, that's still called a suffix kaldu. So if it's an issue of Orla b'chutz laretz, we say suffix Orla b'chutz laretz is mutter. But if it was Nimna v'gomru, if they had a vote and the minority view was outvoted, then the Gemara says in Masechus Nida Daf Zayin that we ignore the minority view. So it's not only Beis Shammai b'makom Beis Hillel in the Mishnah, it's whenever the halacha was voted upon and a final psak was arrived at, then we will always ignore that minority opinion. So the opinion of Beis Shammai that a bush is whatever the berries that grow in a bush are not considered fruit because we don't consider the bush a tree is totally ignored. What happens in the following case? Here there's a machlokes where there's no nimna v'gomru. This was never decided upon by a vote. How does one define exactly a tree or a bush in contrast to a vegetable? What's the definition? How tall does the bush have to be? What if it's a very low bush? So it says in Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't matter. There's a minhag that berries that grow on a bush within the bottom 3 tefachim to the ground. So the Magen Avraham says, since 3 tefachim is lavud, so it considers it's growing on the ground, then it's like a vegetable, you say Baruch Pri Ha'adam. But that's only a minute. Strictly speaking, the din is that you say Baruch Pri Ha'adam on all berries, even if they grow very close to the ground. So what is the klal? How do you determine it? There's no shear how high it has to be, even if the bush is mamash on the ground. So how do you determine, how do you define a tree or a bush? So the Gemara gives you the klal. The Gemara says, if the branches remain from year to year, then it's considered a tree. It doesn't depend how tall it is. But if the branches don't remain from year to year, like in vegetables, you have to plant it every year anew, then it's considered a vegetable. That's the definition of the Gemara. So the Tur in Hilchas Brachos quotes a dispute, quotes the following machlokes. What exactly do you mean that the branches remain from year to year? There are trees and there are bushes where the roots remain from year to year, but all of the branches fall down. All the branches disappear. For example, a banana tree. Banana tree is a big tree. You can climb up, you won't fall down. You can climb up all the way to the top. But then when the season is over, the entire tree collapses and falls down. And you, when it comes the next season, you don't have to plant anything again. The roots remain under the ground. They don't die. And then the roots will develop up again. You have another big tree. You're able to climb up on the other tree without falling down. So that's a dispute in the Shulchan Aruch. What bracha do you say on bananas? Do you say Baruch Pi Ha'adam? Because it's a tree. Why is it a tree? Because the roots remain and you didn't have to plant it again the next year. But he's saying, no, the roots remain. Yeah, the roots don't count. The branches count. The fruits don't grow on the roots. The fruits grow on the branches. So if the branches don't remain from year to year, then it's considered a vegetable. So because of the machlokes, so it's a shaila whether the bracha is supposed to be Baruch Pi Ha'adam or Baruch Pi Ha'adam. So what bracha should you say? So the Shulchan Aruch writes about bananas. It gives you a Spanish, word, which I don't understand. And Rav Avadi Yosef claims that that Spanish word means banana. He says that that's what the word means. It gives you an Arabic word, not a Spanish. It gives you an Arabic word, and Rav Avadi Yosef says that that Arabic word means banana. So the Shulchan Aruch says that you say Baruch Pi Ha'adam on banana. Why? Because if by mistake you say Baruch Pi Ha'adam on a vegetable, then you're not Yosef. But if by mistake he said Baruch Pi Ha'adam on a fruit, then you are Yosef. So if you're not sure what bracha you're supposed to say on a banana, you just say Baruch Pi Ha'adam and you'll be safe. Fine. So we say Baruch Pi Ha'adam not because we're fully convinced that the banana is considered a vegetable, we're misupik. So misafek, you should have to go the chumra in the other direction. Let's say I plant a banana tree, I want to know, what about the bananas that grow the first 3 years, if anything grows? It could be that no bananas will grow the first 3 years. What about the bananas that will grow the first 3 years if they'll be edible? Well, I say that the Rosh Bachis. If I'll say the Torah's Vadai, that bananas have the status of vegetables because only the roots remain and the branches fall down, that vegetables don't have a din of Orla. But we never paskin the Torah's Vadai that they're vegetables. We say, in order to play it safe, say Baruch Pi Ha'adam. What if by mistake a person says Baruch Pi Ha'adam on the banana? So we would say, Vidiyevid, leave it like that. Don't say over another bracha. Maybe you're saying a bracha levatola. Chilav, we recommend say Baruch Pi Ha'adam to play it safe, but the evidence said Baruch Pi Ha'adam, right? So you leave it. Leave it as a Baruch Pi Ha'adam. So we're misupik what the status of the banana is. We're not bevadai. We're not sure what the din is. So what about regarding Orla? So you have to go lechumah. So the first three, the bananas that grow during the first 3 years, misupik, you're not permitted to eat. But what about a chutz loretz? If you have such bananas that grew the first 3 years, so then you're permitted to eat it because whenever you have a machlokas, which was never oiski paskin, the Torah quotes the machlokas in Hilchas Brachas, whether a banana tree, because the roots remain from year to year, but the branches don't remain. And nobody ever paskinized the suffix. We follow misafik, we say, did you say Baruch Pi Ha'adam? But still, safka safka remains a suffix. So regarding bananas, would the laws of Orla apply or not? So we would distinguish between Eretz Yisrael as opposed to Chutzla. That's why every couple of years they make a tumul about strawberries. Because all of the strawberries are also like that. The roots below the ground remain from year to year, but the it doesn't grow on a bush. The vines that they grow on all collapse, and then they grow again all over again the next year. Those strawberries are also shiloh, whether the bracha is similar shiloh, the same shiloh, it's slightly different, but it's approximately the same shiloh as a banana, whether it's considered a fruit or it's considered a vegetable, which is a Baruch Pi Ha'adam. So misafik we say again, misafik we say Baruch Pi Ha'adam. But if the evidence a person to say Baruch Pi Ha'adam, but the evidence leave it like that, don't say over another bracha. So what about the strawberries that grow the first 3 years? And the facts happen to be that all the strawberries that are commercially sold in the stores all grow the first 3 years. The strawberries that grow after the first 3 years don't look pretty. So they use those for jam, for strawberry juice, for flavoring, for other things. But all the strawberries that they sell in the store are all Orla. They all grow the first 3 years. So the Shah, how can you eat it? If it grows the first 3 years, it should be Orla. Whether it grows in America, it grows in Chutzlars. So in America, we're safe. anywhere outside Eretz Yisrael, we say it. Why? Because it's a machlokes regarding the strawberry, the same shayla as the banana, because the roots remain from year to year and the vines collapse. So that's because it's a suffix, whether we should treat it as a fruit or we should treat it as a vegetable. So therefore we have a right to be making on chutz l'aretz and say, well, we're going to treat it as a vegetable misafik, and therefore it's permissible. What about the strawberries that grow in Eretz Yisrael? So that should be misafik, that you should have the din of orla, nohig, and all of the strawberries that are sold in the store. So every 2-3 years, they make a tumul again in Eretz Yisrael. Some rabbi puts in a news, an advertisement in the newspaper, you're not allowed to eat any strawberries that grow in Eretz Yisrael because of the suffix that it may be considered fruit, and the laws of orla apply, and all the strawberries in the world are orla, because they all grow within the first 3 years. Now, chutz l'aretz is a suffix, you go to kumar. But Eretz Yisrael, you have to go to kumar. And then whenever they put this ad in the newspaper, someone else will pipe up all the time, print a whole article and explain, no, that the strawberries are not the same suffix as the bananas, because the way it grows, it's for sure barfi adam. The bananas is suffix barfi adam. But the strawberries for sure is not, and there's nothing to discuss, and even as this goes on in a cycle. Every 3-4 years like that, they have these big advertisements in the newspaper.
The first part is that the dry grow,
no, the same
all
thing.
All grow.
Yeah. Basis in Kiddushin quotes the Yerushalmi where it says explicitly that even if it's a non-Jewish farmer, the laws of orla apply. If I go to the store and I buy something, I don't know if it grew in the first 3 years or not, so that's a suffix orla chutz l'aretz. And it's interesting, the Ran points out on Kiddushin that suffix orla chutz l'aretz is mutter, is even more mutter than sveika the Rabbana l'kula. If I have a shayla regarding something that it may be traded with the Rabbana, so I'm not going to just say, well, sveika the Rabbana l'kula, I can go eat it. I have to first make a phone call, and then if he tells me he doesn't know, I should call up the Department of Agriculture, I have to make another phone call. And then if he says, I don't know, you have to call up this office, and he says, he doesn't know, you have to call up that office, I have to keep on calling and calling. Unless I already have a $25 bill of long-distance phone call, then I'm not going to have to call anymore. I'm not going to go broke, but I'm not going to have to spend so much money. If I've already made a few phone calls, it cost a few dollars, and then the whole thing is only $50. I'm not going to spend $100 to find out if the $50 fruit is kosher or trade. With respect to Suffolk or Lebuchut Slurz, I don't even have to lift the telephone at all. Taisis, quoted by the Mordechai this minute, Bala Taisis felt that they lived in Chutz Lurz for so many years, they weren't in touch with Eretz Yisrael, they weren't observing any of the mitzvahs of Chutz Lurz. They were heartbroken over that. So they wanted to make a yontif that has a shaykhus with Eretz Yisrael to remember that there's such a thing. They wanted to invent a new yontif. Invent a new yontif, you're not allowed to. You're prohibited to invent a new yontif. So they invented a new yontif by leaving on tafel, which is Nishgefelot anyway. Whenever you want, if you have a slight reason, you can leave out the tafel. So they just made up a new yontif just in order to remember that someday we're going to come back to Eretz Yisrael, we're going to be observing all of these mitzvahs. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us all, we all have the ability, and you give us all the courage to move back to Eretz Yisrael and to observe all of these mitzvahs.